Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a free ebook for you to download today that you won't want to miss. It's called In Conversation with Jordan Peterson, Atheism, Christianity, and the Psychology of Belief. This special ebook was created from an unbelievable podcast with famed Canadian psychologist Jordan Peterson. And in it, you'll discover how to bring order to a chaotic world using the wisdom of the Bible. So download your free copy of In Conversation with Jordan Peterson by visiting premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. This is a limited time offer, so make sure to do it today. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Hello and welcome along to this week's edition of Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley, the show that aims to get you thinking every Saturday afternoon here on Premier Christian Radio, listened to throughout the week via our podcast as well. And today, rather than a dialogue as we normally host on the show, it's really the story of a dialogue. My two guests are going to be talking about the conversation that took place on email between them over the course of about 3 years. I'll be introducing them very shortly. For more about the show and make sure you're subscribed to our newsletter, you can visit our show page at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Lots more resources there and the ways to support the show. If you are able to support us, we'd love to send you my ebook. It's called Why You Can Believe, and it's lessons learned really from over 15 years of hosting this show. So again, that's at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable and click on give, or indeed just go to the links with today's show if you're listening via podcast. Coming up later on in the program as well, Luke Martin is going to be introducing a new regular meetup in London called the Creed and Culture Project. John Lennox will be speaking at their first event at the end of September. So Luke will be telling us about that towards the end of today's show. Let's jump in.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
We're talking with two scientists on the show today, Dr. Steve Robinson and Dr. Victoria Lim. They join me to talk about the 3-year email dialogue between them that actually led to Victoria's conversion to Christianity. So you could say it's two scientists, a 3-year dialogue and one conversion. But they've recently released that dialogue in the form of a book, Who is God Really? Two scientists discuss their faith. And they're joining me both today to talk about that journey and the way it shaped them both as scientists and ultimately as Christians. And it's been a relatively recent journey, and the book is relatively recent too, only just published. So welcome along to the show, Steve and Victoria. It's great to have you both with me today. We'll start with you, Steve, as you were the one who got in touch about this. I think you've been listening to Unbelievable for a while now, and even said, I think, that the show was a little bit of an inspiration for the book and the dialogue that you engaged in with Victoria. But before we get to that dialogue, tell us a bit about yourself. You teach science, don't you? Tell us about the job that you've been doing there.
Yeah, so first of all, thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to be on here. So yes, I teach physics. I'm a physics professor at Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee. And my background as to how I got there was not necessarily a straight path. I grew up in the South, not South London, southeastern United States, where everyone is expected to go to church. I don't think I knew anyone that didn't go to church, or I don't think I knew anyone that would claim that they weren't a Christian. A pretty secluded life out in the middle of nowhere. And with that expectation, you know, I grew up as a Christian. I had a Christian family. I went to church every Sunday, and but also knew that I liked science and math, and I didn't know a lot of people like that. So that was a little difficult to process how to go through, how to have a scientific mathematical mindset along with my faith. And in fact, I would say that I felt a little bit of hostility. It felt like a lot of the people that I knew felt like that science and faith could not possibly be reconciled, or even that it's the godless scientists out there who are trying to get us. And so as a Christian, I felt like I was very on the defensive a lot of times with regard to my faith. But I still knew that I wanted to go into something math or science related. And I remember going to college as a young earth creationist and listening to a Christian biologist speak. And this biologist professor told us about how he believed that we were evolved and we, like everything else on the planet, came from this primordial soup, but that he also loved Jesus. And I could not process how he could hold both of those views at the same time. So that was kind of the first time where I began to really start to think about the things I had grown up assuming, and had a lot of questions, just wrestling with my faith and trying to come to terms with these things. So, as I went through college and wasn't able to necessarily process all of this, not a lot of time, not a lot of ability, didn't have a lot of necessarily hermeneutical skills, I guess I would say. Going into grad school, wasn't necessarily in the right place to be able to think about what it would look like to be a faithful Christian and a scientist. I always kind of held these two things at odds with each other, in essence. And as I went through grad school and life became more difficult, I had a family at this time, and I was in school and had financial burdens, research burdens. I ended up falling into a deep, terrible depression in grad school. I guess this is maybe a common thing for grad students to go through. But for about a year and a half was just really, really the faith that I had grown up with was just kind of hanging on by a thread. And part of that was these existential questions that I had about science. Part of it was just like, where is this God who's, you know, I have believed has loved me forever, and it just seems like he's so distant right now. And fortunately, through the help of my wife, she's been incredible, and my church and my friends, over a period of about a year and a half, I came out of that with a different understanding of who God was, and that my entire identity was based not in the fact that I am a Christian necessarily, but in Jesus himself. So Jesus became the foundation for who I am and what I'm about. And what that effectively meant is that I could suffer for him in essence, right? If I'm going through this depression, then maybe this is something that he's trying to teach me instead of the fact that he is distant from me. And so when I came out of that depression, and actually that was right when I began to work in this job that I have now as a physics professor. When I came out of that, I really felt like I was going to try to make it a point to be able to talk to people about the difficult things that they're going through in their lives. So, you know, for example, if I have a Christian who says that they are depressed, or I have a Christian who says, I'm not even sure that God exists anymore, or I'm deeply caught up in sin, what that experience did for me was to take me from a point where maybe, honestly, I probably would have been a little judgmental before, to a point where now I can say, I've been there. I have been caught up in sin, and I have doubted the existence of God, and I've gone through depression. So let's just talk about it. I'm not going to be scandalized by anything that you're going through, because I've been there, and I'm willing to, you know, sit down with you and tell you that you are loved and I love you, and let's talk about Jesus together. And that kind of became the mindset that I decided to have with any of my students. And that kind of takes me up to maybe right before I met Vicky.
Well, that's a great place to hand it over to Vicky, and then we'll tease out the story of what happened when you did meet each other. Vicky, welcome along to the show. Tell us first of all what you do right now, what kind of branch of science or medicine you're involved in right now.
Yeah, so first of all, thanks for having me on the show. We're both excited to be here. So right now, I work as a technical writer in software. So essentially, I'm putting together software documentation. Before this, I was just completed my PhD in chemistry. So had the intent to do computational chemistry in pharma, realized I had a knack for writing and editing, and with the computational aspect of computational chemistry, kind of switched gears a little bit, and now I'm doing technical writing and technology.
Great, great stuff. Now, when you arrived to pursue your studies at Belmont, you weren't a Christian. Tell us a little bit about what you background you did come from, and to what extent you had engaged Christianity or not at all. What was the story on your end?
Yeah, so I grew up an hour south of Nashville in Tennessee, and so part of the Bible Belt. And I didn't know any other Asians growing up. My parents moved from California before I was born, and living in the Bible Belt meant that I knew a lot of people who were white and Christian, and that was something I just naively associated together because my parents were Buddhist, and my friends were white and Christian, so I assumed white people were Christian, Asian people were Buddhist. As I got older and I realized that was a naive view, I realized that, okay, like, that's not necessarily the case. But knowing a lot of Christian people, I didn't really, like, have any influence directly into my life. And it just made me think that, well, nobody has ever talked to me about God. And I've, you know, when I was a senior in high school, I thought, oh, I've went 18 years and not needed a God in my life, so why complicate things further? So I would have probably labeled myself agnostic or atheist, kind of, you know, or a mix in between at that time. But practically speaking, I was not religious. I was a-religious. And I didn't have any interest or time to pursue religion because I needed to establish my life and go to college and build a career. So when I went to Belmont, I chose Belmont knowing that it was a Christian school, but not being Christian, because I liked a lot of what Belmont had to offer in terms of, you know, really great community, a small student to teacher ratio. I liked the idea of having smaller classes and not being, you know, a faceless name. And, you know, it was close to home. So that was something I appreciated. I had to take, you know, classes that were, we have a liberal arts curriculum at Belmont. So I learned a lot about, you know, Christianity just from going to these classes and just going to events on campus, but it was always distant for me. It was fine. It was interesting to know what a lot of people in this country believe, and it was to get a better understanding of, you know, people I knew, my friends and others, but it wasn't anything that interested me. And I had a few conversations over the course of, you know, the 4 years I was in college, but nothing really spoke to me. Nothing drove home to me as to say, like, I need this. And it's not just, I feel like I would have to delude myself in order to say I believe in a personal God. And so after college, I went to grad school in Orange County, California. And knowing that I'd be leaving Tennessee, I figured, that's the end of all that Christian influence. You know, it's time to go be a scientist. But here I am today.
Yes. I mean, when it comes to the way you viewed Christianity and science at that point, when you arrived at Belmont, did you essentially think there was a kind of a disjunct between them?
Oh, certainly. Yes. I had this assumption that Christian and science were just Christians and scientists were orthogonal. You couldn't really believe or do one and also do the other. And I remember I knew of a person who was a biology major and she also was Christian. And I remember just being really confused about that. Like, how do you explain evolution then? I didn't ask her about it. I didn't want to antagonize. And that was part of the reason that this book was really nice, is that I felt like I had the freedom to ask questions that might seem a little bit more antagonistic without trying to be antagonistic, with really just the goal of understanding, even if, you know, it might come across kind of abrasive.
So when Victoria walked into your physics class, Steve, what did you make of her? Was she a good student?
Well, she actually had a reputation. I think I saw her the first time, maybe her sophomore year, and I had talked to a few other professors, and they were already kind of talking her up a little bit. But, you know, we physicists, we take pride in the difficulty of our classes. So I was like, well, we'll see what she's really about. So, but it turns out she was absolutely the best student I've ever had. I mean, I've been teaching now for over 14 years and absolutely number one. I remember her coming into my office and asking me for maybe for a little bit of help with some of these problems. And I would say, Vicky, I didn't assign any of these problems. And she would say, yes, I know, I'm doing all the problems in the book. And I was so I would say, well, this is going to be a long year for both of us then. And I remember when she took my quantum mechanics class as well. I would intentionally put some problems in there that I would say, I wonder if Vicky can get this one. Let's make this a little harder. And she
Wow.
nailed everything. I could not put anything past her. So yes, she was just a top-notch student. And I knew that she was going to do great things, and I know that she's still going to do great things. She's just a
Yeah.
very, very
And
intelligent
in your
and hardworking.
interactions, did the issue of faith come up? What's your memory, Vicky, on that? Did you ever sort of broach this subject with Steve?
Well, maybe I should also give my take on the whole like taking Dr. Robinson's classes for the first time. So I didn't have physics in high school, and I knew it would be a hard class, but I was I took chemistry, and people said chemistry would be hard, and it wasn't that bad for me. And so I walk in, and it was right before the first exam, and I was freaking out because I did exactly only the homework problems that were assigned, and I kept getting them wrong, and then I would just memorize how to do those problems, but not really understand what was going on. And I remember it was the office hour right before the exam, and I went into Steve's office, and I was like trying to understand how to do this physics problem, and I couldn't get it. And I think I literally started crying a little bit there because I never felt so frustrated before, and I felt like it was foreign for me to not understand this thing that was taught to me, and it really freaked me out. And I thought I was going to get a B in this class, but I completely turned around, like turned around my mindset, and I'm like, I'm gonna do everything. I'm like, I'm not only gonna do the assigned homework problems because clearly that's not enough for me. I think I got a B or C on the first exam, and then ever since I just kind of just turned. I was also afraid of like going into Dr. Robinson's office hours all the time and bugging him, but then I got rid of that fear. I'm like, you know what? It's my grade. I'm gonna take control of it. And and so that was that year for me. And I will say that that physics class, it was so challenging to me, and I never felt so much just uncertainty in how I could like how it was for me to grasp a new topic. Like even in my graduate chemistry classes, I did not have so much trouble as taking physics for the first time.
Gosh. What about the faith dimension? Did that ever come up in conversation in those months when you were just a student in Steve's class?
Yeah, not at all, really. So I would say, so I remember on the first day of class, and it's syllabus day, and we're going through the syllabus, and at the end of the syllabus, there was a verse from the Bible, and I was like, okay, whatever. And Dr. Robbins says, tells the whole class, I love each and every one of you. And I just got really confused. I was like, a professor has never told me that he loves me, like in the class. And I was really confused, and I was thinking, well, does that mean this class is going to be at all easier? It was not. It was not easier. So, that was, it was apparent how Dr. Robinson kind of approached his teaching and his students from the way just, day one of the class. And I knew that he was involved in college ministry, and I knew people who, were involved in these programs and had talked about, the stuff that Dr. Robinson was involved in, but I never had interest. And it really, like, all of our conversations during the classes that I took were pretty much about physics and quantum mechanics. It was, really not personal and really much beyond that.
Well, back to you then, Steve. How did you end up, getting into this dialogue eventually? Can you tell us the story?
Yeah, so I have made it a point to try to help students along who need help. And there are a couple every year who are really struggling with different aspects of life, family issues, faith, and I try to be involved. Vicky seemed to have it all together, so so I didn't feel necessarily a need to step in at that time. So yeah, this conversation didn't actually start until after she was graduated and moved away. And she just kind of kept up. I had written her a letter of recommendation, and I was interested in just to see how she was progressing through her PhD program. And she would email me every few months or something like that, just to kind of see how I'm doing. And eventually, I kind of have this mindset where if Jesus is my identity and this is who I am and what I'm about, then if you're going to really get to know me, then this is going to be something that I'm going to bring up, right? I'm not going to shove it in your face. I'm not going to force you. We can still be friends. If you don't believe it, that's fine. But we can't continue on without and me hiding this, right? So I kind of got to the point where we had been talking enough just over email that I was really curious as to what she believed. I didn't really know very much, but I just wanted to have a conversation just to see where she was. And also just the fact that, I know grad school is hard, and I know that she has gone through a lot of the same things that I did as well. And if I believe Jesus is who he says he is, that this is good news. And not only is it good news, but it's the best news. And the mindset, the mentality, the conviction, the courage that Christ gives us can actually help you through grad school, right? It might not get you an A in all of your classes, but I felt like I had good news to share with her.
And Vicky, wasn't one of your supervisors on the PhD turned out a Christian as well?
Yes, his name is David Mobley, and I knew of his research and I knew of his science and his connections, but when I found out he was Christian, it completely surprised me. I didn't expect to find anyone Christian in the PhD program, nor, not even especially like my specific PhD advisor. I had to. But yeah, so it was a surprise, but it was kind of, I was in that mentality of like, I've left Christian influences behind me, so this is just a, that's a nice thing, but I wasn't going to pursue a conversation or anything.
And so tell me what happened. When did the first email happen where you kind of broached the subject, at least, of faith was broached with Steve as you kept in touch in the following years?
Yeah, so Dr. Remsen asked me what I believed, and I didn't know what to say to that. I knew that I never had a need or interest in religion, and usually the people that talk to me about religion, and by that I mean predominantly Christianity, it was in a pushy sort of manner of like, if you don't convert, you're going to hell. And it was there was never any intention or never any intent of having caring about what I thought or like forming a relationship with me before telling me I need to believe this thing. And so when Dr. Rumson asked that question, I didn't have anything to say because I didn't have any thoughts towards it. I figured that I could believe in a God who exists in kind of the deism sense, but I didn't understand why that God would be personal and why, he would want a relationship and how he could have a relationship with me personally with over 8 billion people on the planet. So I didn't respond because I didn't have anything to say, and I felt bad about it. I essentially ghosted him on that email, and I like as the months went by, I'm like.
I was going to say, what were you thinking at this point, Steve? Did you think, oh no, I've just completely ruined this? She obviously didn't want me to ask that question.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, we had become friends, and I really thought that I had just pushed the boundary too far and asked a question that, maybe was offensive, and she didn't want to talk to me anymore. So I honestly thought I had lost a friend. And a strange story that actually happens out of this is that silence period there was about 8 months, if I remember correctly. And I remember at a church meeting that I was having, Vicky came to mind, and I asked for prayer for her, just like mainly just because I felt like I had lost a friend and offended someone, and I wanted to maybe restore that relationship. And within, I think, about a day and a half, she emailed me out of nowhere. And it was that response email in which I kind of reconsidered about how I might approach this, because I wasn't gonna let it go. But I decided to bring it up again. And so it was after that time, yes, when I thought we might not talk to each other ever again, that I decided to
Yeah,
give it one more
I was
shot.
going to say. So, and this is all in the relatively recent past. So, when did the email conversation begin in earnest then, after this 8 month hiatus? When are we talking about, Steve?
I think it was right around 3 years ago. So I believe, or four, sorry, 4 years ago. August of 2017.
What made you then decide, okay, I'm going to give this a shot, Vicky? What was sort of, did you just think, I don't know, I'll give it a shot, see what Steve has to say about this?
Yeah, so, you know, all this time I had felt bad about not responding because I still respected and you know, saw Steve as a friend, and I didn't know how to say anything after not responding. And like after 8 months, how do you respond to that? But when I did reach out, it was because I had a paper published recently, and it was one of my first papers. And, you know, as a scientist, you know, for better or worse, you're measured by the number of peer-reviewed publications that you have. So this was really an exciting milestone in what I saw as my scientific career. So I wanted to share that news. So then, you know, when Steve asked that question again about faith, I was like, okay, well, now I already ghosted him once. I can't do it again. And so, you know, I'll try to, you know, answer sort of in the best, like, and, you know, put as much thought into it as I can, knowing that it wasn't really something that I cared about. But, you know, also knowing that I really am a believer of, you know, personal growth and just really improving my life and being open-minded to views that are not my own. So, you know, I entered this conversation with curiosity and really just with the respect that, like, you know, I'm interested in knowing what you know, Steve, a person who I super respected and someone who I saw was very intellectual and rational. What did you have to say about this? Because I always thought Christians had to be, you know, irrational or illogical or just needed a crutch. So I was kind of curious as to why would a competent, rational person need God?
Well, look, we're going to go to a quick break, but we'll come back and talk about the conversation that ensued from that point onwards, and which I'm sure neither of you ever envisaged turning into a book 3 or 4 years later. But that's what happened. And it's available now. It's called Who Is God Really? Two Scientists Discuss Their Faith. That's the book that Dr. Victoria Lim and Dr. Stephen Robinson wrote together, which really just came out of an email correspondence over several years. So we'll be back talking about that journey in just a moment's time. You're listening to Unbelievable. We'll see you soon.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Welcome back to this week's edition of the show. Just a really interesting story and a journey and two friends who got talking. We like conversations on Unbelievable. And I was really touched, Steve, when you got in touch about this book that's been released. And it's not been published by a major publisher or anything like that. But I just thought this is a fascinating story and it deserves to be heard. So that's why I've got you guys on. Who is God really? Two scientists discuss their faith. And you were even kind enough to say that you felt that the show Unbelievable and the conversations we have kind of had inspired you to go on this journey of having a conversation with Victoria and in the end publishing this book. So tell us sort of how that conversation evolved as you went on, and where did you begin, and you know, what was it like? Was it very awkward to begin with, or did you kind of gradually warm up to each other as you had this email conversation?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's fair to say it might have started awkwardly because I wasn't exactly sure where she was, or, you know, can I keep this up, and are we going to hurt each other's feelings or offend each other? And so I tried to make it clear from the beginning that I'm genuinely curious as to what you believe. I'm not here to shove my beliefs, you know, on you, or you know, we're not going to not be friends if you don't believe what I believe. So hopefully that came across at the beginning that this is just a conversation between two friends. But I would say, yeah, and as far as the Unbelievable show, I didn't really, this is a conversation that we're having, not necessarily like a formal debate. I'm not setting out premises and coming to conclusions necessarily. So we're just talking as friends, but kind of going back and looking at it, I was making a lot of the arguments that, you know, you come across a lot, Justin. The moral argument, the cosmological argument, the argument from reason or consciousness, and these things were just, I kind of realized that my own faith was grounded in these things that for example the Unbelievable show has put a name to, and as Vicky mentioned, a lot of these are perhaps deistic arguments to begin with, And so I would say probably it would be fair to say the first maybe quarter of the book is sort of along that vein. You know, what reason might we have to suppose that there is a God at all, whether he's involved or not?
That's really interesting to hear. What level kind of what did you find in terms of those particular sorts of topics as they got discussed in those early emails, Victoria? I know that one of the chapters early on is called Beyond the Natural World. Was that a kind of a starting place, that kind of question of is there more than just the physical world, and what sort of things did that open up for you, that particular part of the conversation, Vicky?
Yeah, so, I wasn't opposed to the idea of a God existing, so I wouldn't say that I started out as an atheist. I was more in the camp of, maybe there is or maybe there isn't, but either way, it doesn't matter. With the more, with the ch chapters on sort of is there a God and sort of what evidence might point towards that, I think a lot of those arguments, those reasoning, and it really just for me helped me see the place of science, right? Science does a really good job of explaining natural phenomenon and really explaining the physical world, but it is by definition limited to the natural world and the physical world. So, does it make sense to use science to probe God's existence? No, if, because God would be beyond science in the natural world. So it really just, I think, gave me this foundation to see that, Christianity or really belief in a God and pursuing rigorous science were not incompatible. And so that sort of laid the foundation to explore God's nature, in later chapters of the book of, is he actually personal or is he just kind of an observer?
I would add to that, and one of the reasons that our subtitle is Two Scientists Discuss Their Faith is because a lot of this is not necessarily us debating science faith arguments. I didn't have a lot of issue getting a lot of those across to Vicky. You know, we both believe in evolution. We're okay with Big Bang. We're okay with modern science and all these things. These were not issues that we had to debate. But the thing that we have in common is that our training has taught us to think logically and rationally as scientists. And so how do we approach our faith logically and rationally? And does Christianity, stand up to that sort of scrutiny? So that's more of the approach. It's less of a are science and faith compatible? And more, what does it look like for a scientist to be a faithful believer?
I mean, obviously, there's a lot we could discuss about those aspects of it, but in a way, we often discuss those sorts of fundamental arguments for God and that sort of thing on the show. But I was interested in your question earlier, which I think does come up in those early chapters, which Vicky, which was, with 8 billion people out there, why would God be interested and that sort of thing? So just tease out what that question was for you and why, because at one level, as you say, you were sort of like, well, maybe there is a God, maybe there isn't, but I'm not too bothered, and I don't see why God would be bothered either. So tell us about that kind of perspective and what kind of questions and conversation it led to with Steve.
I guess so. One analogy that I heard, and this was a conversation I had before the email conversation, the book conversation, was in this conversation, I heard this analogy about myself and my cat. And so I have a cat, and I've had her since she was a kitten. She was like 6 weeks old, and I got her the last year of college, and I was in a state of depression when I got her, and just having her in my life made it so much better. And I poured out so much love for her, and it was really novel for me to feel so much love towards another creature, towards another being. I didn't feel like I had, a really tight-knit family growing up, so I didn't really like, I didn't really hug my parents. And I don't know if it was because of an Asian thing or just because, we're, a little bit more, not the touchy-feely type. But it was really interesting for me to just, examine my own feelings for this cat who just happened into my life. And so, I was thinking about, I have so much love for her. She didn't ask for it. She hasn't done anything to deserve it, really. Just, she just kind of sits there and look cute. But I want this relationship with her. And so this was a really great, frame of reference to really think about why God would want a relationship with me, right? I didn't create myself. I didn't come out of nowhere. And, if there is this creator, it would make sense that, we as humans are relational beings, and it would make sense that, the creator would want a relationship with his creation. And that's not to say, obviously just because you want a relationship doesn't mean like God is there and all of a sudden he's personal. But I think that was really important for me to see this connection between, loving my cat unconditionally and, the possibility of being loved, in a similar vein.
Steve, anything to add to that, as you started to talk about those issues with Vicky?
Yeah, and that's sort of the progression of the book. I guess, like I said, the first maybe quarter of the book is are these deistic arguments. But I think what I began to realize that with a lot of these arguments, they lead into theism pretty easily. For example, the moral argument, that there is objective morality out there implies that someone cares whether we have morality. This has been put into us, or that when we talk about the cosmological argument that that the universe began to exist, that someone who could create that universe would not do it accidentally. So we were created with intention, and that someone who's given us a conscious mind has done this again with intention and purpose. So these sorts of arguments naturally head into it looks like somebody's behind it, right? And if somebody's behind these things, that led us into, I guess maybe I'd call it the second half of the book, where we start to think about, well, what is this God actually like? So it seems like he has done these things with us in mind to some degree, but what is he like? And honestly, we have a lot of competing ideas out there, a lot of different religions, and how do we parse out which is correct? So that's kind of where we headed for the second half.
So what kind of questions were coming up for you, Vicky, as you started to talk about what is this God like and why would Christianity be true out of potentially all the different religions that exist?
Yeah, so a lot of this is actually in chapter 9, which is one of my favorite chapters of the book, because we talk about, why specifically Christianity might be the truth. And in this chapter, Dr. Remsen lays out a list of, I think, like 14 or so questions about, if I were evaluating a religion, what questions I would evaluate and why. And those questions, a lot of which I agreed with, but some of them were like, does this religion make me look good, or is it, really showing me for telling showing me who I am? And just questions that sort of really, we're getting at the truth of who we are, who we are as human beings, and not really trying to, uplift us for, power or money or status or anything like that. So it was really, eye-opening to consider these facets that Christianity has that maybe not other religions have of, what does it say about, why are we here? Is it that we need to detach ourselves from everything, or is that we need to love and form relationships with others? And what rings true in my own experience? And really, so, a lot of these questions really just help me to really think about Christianity in a more analytical fashion. That being said, I didn't really, dive into like Islam or Buddhism or other religions in the same way. And I think, a lot of that hinges upon what do we know about Jesus as a person?
In what sense? In the sense that if what we know about him is true, then it kind of gives you your answer, and you don't have to ex exhaustively research all the other faiths. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I think I guess you can kind of see it like a shortcut. Like if Jesus didn't exist, or he, wasn't resurrected, then maybe that's a shortcut to say, okay, well, Christianity is immediately out. But if you can say, he existed, he was resurrected, and really look at all the evidence that, history provides in favor of his existence and life, then that can say, then that can really just point you, give you a shortcut to be like, okay, well, maybe he really was the son of God. And maybe, if he was the son of God, then maybe the things that he said are true. And then what does that mean for my own life personally? I think that sort of all just centers on Jesus as a person. And, you know, for me, that raised questions like, well, then, you know, what about all the Jews out there? You know, what do you think about them? And sort of like, you know, my questions that kind of came out from the existence of Jesus, you know, if he did, like, you know, it was, you know, once again, this email conversation was a safe space for me to ask these questions about, well, you know, do you think everyone else is, you know, doomed or whatever? And so I just think that, like, it was a nice, you know, framework and a nice environment for me to question these things.
Yeah. What do you think were some of the toughest questions, Steve, that Vicky asked along the way?
Without a doubt, she kept asking about the Trinity over and over. And I challenge any Christian to try to have a discussion about the Trinity with a non-believer. And it was tough for me. You know, it was, like I said, I grew up in church. It's just the Trinity exists. This is what we believe. But there were many times where I'd have to stop and think, what do I actually believe? Do I have a clue what I'm talking about here? So I had to do a lot of research myself to figure that out. But I would say, yeah, that was a big issue. But what I kept hearing from Vicky over and over again was, okay, granted, maybe there is a God out there, but what does that have to do with me? And that's really why we kind of went the route that we did toward the latter half of the book, where we actually started to get into scripture itself. To think about, does this, it's one thing to, you know, philosophically assent to the fact that there may be a God out there, but it's a different to actually change your life and turn your life over to this bigger than we can imagine, invisible being out there. I mean, it sounds crazy sometimes, even when I talk about it myself. So what does it have to do with me? And so I really tried to think about that in terms of how I've processed that myself, right? At the end of the day, my own difficulties in my life have to be filtered through a lot of the truth that I find in scripture and a lot of these philosophical ideas as well. You know, I mean, it's certainly not enough if my daughter's boyfriend breaks up with her to say, well, you know, it's okay. God created the universe 13.8 billion years ago. Just
yeah.
Right. We want something more. We want something more than that. Right. So, but this has to come, it might, depending on the person, it might be filtered through apologetic arguments. It may not. But for us, we are both skeptics by nature. You know, I'm skeptical of the things that have been taught to me throughout my life. I'm skeptical of the other side as well. And I really wanted to think about, do I really know this like I think I know it? So it was kind of a test to me. And in all honesty, if this book could have turned out differently, and it might have been that the student convinced the professor to be an agnostic. but, you know, it didn't turn out that way. But I was trying to be as open-minded as she was and try to figure some of this stuff out myself.
I get that. And Vicky, as you went through this process, and I suppose the conversation turned from the more kind of purely intellectual question of does God exist, which in a way I think is often a safe place for many atheist skeptics to be, because it keeps it at arm's length when you're just still discussing God as a concept in a kind of rather abstract way. What were your personal feelings as you started to sort of ask yourself, and Steve obviously probed, does this matter? Does it make sense? Could it be that this has any kind of, you know, calling or put any questions over your own life and that sort of thing? What was going on for you as you went through that process?
Yeah, so I, you know, when Steve shared about these experiences that were sort of like miracles that happened into his life, I've heard about it from others before, and it really caused me to reflect in my own life of how there's been, you know, experiences that I had where it just worked out, and the odds of, you know, the situation working out as it did seemed, you know, more improbable than it could have any other way. And so I really thought about, okay, like, what, how do I explain these things happening in my life? Was it just pure chance? And, you know, I tried to really be a neutral observer into my own life of, you know, I felt that, okay, so I don't really think God is personal, but, you know, let's say he is, would I be, you know, receptive to that? And I knew, and I knew the answer was no. So I really think that was really interesting for me to realize that about myself. I had this, you know, I tried to be open-minded, but I was sort of leaning against, you know, there being a personal God, because I didn't want to, you know, have to like give up my whole life and you know, admit that I was wrong and really just turn it all around. And I think that once I really thought about that, I realized, oh, well, you know, then I'm not really being fair to both sides of the argument. And I'm really just being prideful for, because I want my life to go the way it's going. And I want to just keep living the way I am. And, you know, once I realized that, you know, I wasn't really being the unbiased observer that I was, I really think that really helped open my, you know, open my heart and open my mind to arguments that, yes, God could be personal. And once I was really receptive to that, I think, you know, a lot of the conversation, you know, I interpreted that in a more, I guess, empathetic way and just an open, more open-minded way.
That's interesting. Did you kind of sense as you went along, Steve, any kind of change in the way Vicky was engaging with the conversation in that way?
There were a lot of emotional, I'm not an emotional person, but there were a lot of emotional ups and downs for me. There was one point where I think it looked like we were going to call it quits. We were both kind of tired of talking about a lot of these things. And it felt like to some degree, we might just have to agree to disagree, or we didn't necessarily have disagreements, but I just felt like I was not doing a very good job communicating things, or this just wasn't something that she was interested in. And like I said from the very beginning, you know, if we quit this thing 2 years in, then okay, it wouldn't feel like a waste of time to me. But there were some times where she would say something like, yeah, that seemed to make sense. And in my mind, having been a Christian for a very long time, I would say, well, then the only logical step is that you become a Christian. and she would just not quite see it that way. And it took a lot more. But, you know, I think, and I give all the credit to God for this, just keeping us both motivated to continue the conversation. To keep us both patient with each other. You know, you talk to somebody for 3 years over email, you know, you might feel like, all right, we've said enough. But eventually I could see her, you know, heading in the right direction. We did take a little break for a while. I forget how long that was, a few months or something like that. And over that break, we were still emailing each other, not book content, but she was just kind of talking about, you know, I think you went to church and you were going to a graduate student ministry and having these sorts of conversations. And I could see, you know, this is not all about me. God is doing things in her life. And that's a wonderful thing to see him do that. Cause the whole time we were 2,000 miles apart from each other, you know, we never got to see each other. I couldn't invite her to church. I couldn't invite her to anything. And so, It was fun, especially in retrospect, watching God work in her life.
Tell us about what was going on then outside of this email conversation you were having with Steve at this time, Vicky. What else was going on? I mean, Steve mentioned you started attending a church at some point. What caused that? And had you kind of made a decision at that point? Or was that just more of the kind of, let's check this Christianity thing out?
Yeah, it was definitely more in the vein of like, okay, I'm curious and I'll just keep pursuing it. And, you know, in this conversation, this email conversation started in the fall of 2017. This is actually when I was going through my PhD advancement to candidacy exam. And so that is sort of one of the big milestones of a PhD, where you sort of prove to your PhD committee that, yes, I can think like a scientist and I can ask the right questions and demonstrate that I can really pursue a scientific study from start to finish. And so I was really like, I was spending a lot of time, you know, in that aspect of my life, as well as spending, you know, a few hours a day really thinking about these deeper philosophical conversations. And, you know, I think there was, you know, a point where, yes, I think we both started to feel kind of burnt out. And I think maybe it hit me a little bit sooner. And I think we took two breaks or so. But, you know, concurrent to this conversation that we had, there was a graduate student ministry that started at UC Irvine. And, you know, I was like, well, I actually originally went because they didn't say it was a graduate student ministry and they just promised free food. So
always the way to reel the students in a Christian ministry, promise free food.
Yeah, I realized it was a graduate student ministry. And, you know, I felt tricked at first and I felt kind of affronted. But, you know, I got into these conversations with people who had completed their PhD. So it was, you know, to me, it was more evidence of people who, you know, are scientists, who are rational thinkers, who think this is legitimate. So, you know, why would I just dismiss them out of hand unless I think I'm so much smarter or more rational than them? So, you know, those conversations sort of led me to pursue this book. It's called The Reason for God by Tim Keller. And that really helped open up a lot of, you know, conversations for me where I actually discussed this book with my PhD advisor, David Mobley. And so I was having, you know, conversations with Steve, conversations with my PhD advisor, and going to these events with the graduate student ministry and really hearing a lot of different aspects of Christianity from different sources. And something that was amazing to me, and I don't think it's, I don't know if, you know, to others it's like, okay, whatever, but I was hearing a lot of the same things about who God was and who Jesus was and what is the whole point of Christianity. And it was surprising to me because I thought that different people or different Christians in different areas would believe different things. And yes, I, you know, I figured everybody probably believes in God, but like a lot of the core principles, the core themes were sort of all the same with these different groups of people. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, if there's this, you know, synergy, there's this underlying theme and there's this consistency in these different conversations and messages. So like, you know, maybe it's not like, you know, so, you know, for example, one of the hard points I had to deal with was, why are there all these different denominations and why can't Christians all agree with each other if, you know, if it's just a single religion? And, you know, when I started to see what the differences were, I realized that they were really, you know, differences in interpretation, but really the core themes, the core principles were the same for a believer here versus a believer here. Like, you know, Steve never met my PhD advisor, but, you know, I could have believed that I was having the same conversation with, you know, either person. So it was really amazing for me to see that there was consistency in the message and that, you know, there could be weight from these, you know, PhD and scientifically trained people that I was talking to.
It's really interesting. We're going to go to another break. Time's flying by. And maybe we'll hear sort of what took you, if you like, across the line eventually and how the conversation evolved. Because I know that a quite significant amount of the latter part of the conversation was almost a sort of joint Bible study in the book of John. So we'll come to that. But my guests today on Unbelievable are Dr. Steve Robinson and Dr. Victoria Lim. They've written a book together that came out of a 3-year email dialogue between them. Who is God really? Two scientists discuss their faith, and we'll continue the conversation in just a moment's time. Welcome back to the final part of this week's edition of Unbelievable, bringing you conversations that matter every week. You can find us at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. And we've lots of exciting things in the pipeline for this autumn. We are busy beavers, me and my colleague Peter Byram, who is now my go-to colleague for all things apologetics and theology. We've got all kinds of things coming up. An online apologetics course, which will be released by the end of September. We're developing YouTube channels for our NT Wright and C.S. Lewis content. By the way, if you haven't yet checked out either of those podcasts, the Ask NT Wright Anything podcast that I host with renowned theologian N.T. Wright, you might be interested in it. You might enjoy it. Just search it up wherever you get your podcast from. And our most recent, if you like, podcast that we've added to our stable from Unbelievable is the C.S. Lewis podcast with Alistair McGrath, currently hosted by Ruth Jackson, but she's gone on maternity leave. But we've got some great shows that she recorded before she went on maternity leave that you can listen to on that podcast. The C.S. Lewis podcast with Alistair McGrath and the Ask NT Wright Anything podcast, if you are a keen podcast listener. Speaking of podcasts that have been popular, the rise and fall of Mars Hill has been a biggie in the Christian world recently. So we decided in the last week to put out as our classic replay an interview I had with Mark Driscoll, the subject of the rise and fall of Mars Hill. This was from back in early 2012. Interesting responses, and I'll read a couple of those out later on in the show, as well as hearing from Luke. Just a quick shout out to James. He wants to say thank you so much for your work and for Unbelievable, Justin. Found the podcast around 2 months ago. I'm 18 and was brought up going to church in a Christian school. When I got to secondary school, I lost my faith, but found it again after an experience I'll never forget. I was feeling so empty one night and overwhelmed. I prayed, I shouted to God. I felt a tingling on my right side, forcing me to look out the window. It was just a normal street, but one shining star in the sky was there. Recently, I've been going through a time of suicidal thoughts, and I was so anxious at the time of my confirmation back in May, I was doubtful again. I thought I was stupid. But then I found the Unbelievable show, and it helped me so much to answer the questions that my anxiety presented. It reminds me that I'm on a journey. Can't wait to learn more from your discussions. Keep up the great work. I'm being looked after by lots of people, and I know God wants me to use this precious life. James, thank you for getting in touch. That was actually via my Instagram that James got in touch with me, but great to hear that the show's been helpful as you're trying to work things out, and my thoughts and prayers with you as well as you're going on that journey, obviously through a lot of personal sort of, you know, anxiety and turmoil and whatever along the way. Just want to say as well, quick shout out to friend of the show, Ed Atkinson, who helps to put on the regular Unbelievable Skeptics and Christian discussion group, normally meeting in London, but during COVID has been meeting online. Continuing to do that at the moment, says Ed, just because they don't feel it would be quite the right thing to be back in person yet at their London venue. But they're kicking off again in September with Simon Edwards presenting arguments based on his book, The Sanity of Belief. And we, of course, had Simon on with Rationality Rules just a couple of weeks ago. So, yes, if you want to be part of that, go to meetup.com. You're looking for the Unbelievable Christian and Skeptic Discussion Group, and it's happening very soon, this Monday, the 6th of September, if you want to join with them for that. Coming up later on tonight on The Profile, as the Paralympic Games conclude in Tokyo this weekend, we have an interview with GB Paralympian athlete and Christian Steph Reed on The Profile. You can also get that on its own Profile podcast. And next week here on Unbelievable, we're talking about getting high with the Most High. We're talking about hallucinogenic drugs and faith. This has been a big topic in a lot of circles recently, but Ashley Land was a regular user of hallucinogenic drugs, believing they connected her with a sort of bigger reality. But some bad trips, some bad experiences led her to question all of that and on the path towards Christian faith. Well, she'll be in conversation with Dr. Peter Husted Hughes, who's an advocate of the value of hallucinogenic drugs for opening up our consciousness. This is going to be an interesting one. If you can be with us for that next week on the podcast, on the radio show, and of course via video as well, where you can find all of our video discussions and debates on the Unbelievable YouTube channel. Okay, time to get back into our conversation. Two scientists, a three-year dialogue, and one conversion.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's edition of the show, and really enjoying today's conversation between Dr. Steve Robinson and Dr. Victoria Lim, two scientists, a three-year dialogue, and the conversion of Vicky in the end. We'll talk about that in a moment, Vicky, but who is God really? Two scientists discuss their faith is what they've been talking about. And if you want to find out more, they've got a website, whoisgodreally.com, but there's a link to the book as well from today's show, so do go and check that out. And what you'll read is really, you know, obviously an edited one, but a transcript of the long form dialogue that took place between them. And it's really fascinating just to see that conversation play out in real time in the book. So Steve, you kind of eventually ended up, you know, moving away from just the purely intellectual philosophical questions to sort of, yeah, going down this route of a sort of Bible study. What was the aim of that as you started to dig in? Kind of, you sort of went through the book of John together essentially and just both put your thoughts and comments and questions into this dialogue as you went along. Why did you choose that, and what was the reason for wanting to do this kind of way of actually kind of concluding your conversation in a way?
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, I was tired of my own voice. I wanted to get Jesus's perspective on things, and you know, I could see Vicky wanting to learn more and more about the personal nature of God. And I thought, what better book than the book of John for us to go through, where we get to see Jesus just love his disciples, even love his enemies, all the way to the cross and through the resurrection. So it's such a beautiful picture of that. But also, you know, Jesus makes a lot of very bold claims in the book of John. You know, for example, at the end of John chapter 8, where he says, "Before Abraham was, I am." So I wanted to just put these things out on the table and say, you know, what type of person would use the name of God for himself while he's walking around on this earth? And let's deal with it. Let's talk about these texts and figure out what it's about. Because I didn't want Vicky to get her entire picture of Christianity from me, because my view is certainly flawed in some ways, and I wanted it to come straight from the source. So I thought, what better way than for us to go through a book of the Bible together, and that's what we did.
What did that raise for you as you started going through that? Had you read any of the Gospels up to that point, Vicky? And what were your kind of reactions as you started to read through the book of John in this way?
Yeah, so I had conversations actually when I was in college still with my differential equations professor. And, you know, he was sort of the first person who really directly asked me, you know, what do you believe? And gave me a bunch of books, including the Gospels. And so I started to read through it, and I remember reading through it the first time. It was like a nice story, like this person doing, you know, performing miracles. And I didn't really grasp the weight of, you know, his claim to be God and sort of the personal implications of that. So going through the Bible study was better because I could, you know, discuss these things that didn't really make sense. You know, for example, like when they're at the wedding feast and, you know, Jesus calls his mother woman, I'm like, well, that's so rude. But you don't really see that in, you know, in context. And so, you know, instead of just focusing on all the complaints I had, you know, I could talk through them and really, really get a better understanding of terms and context and different words that were used and what does it mean for this event to happen then. So even though I was familiar with this, with John before, it was more illuminating to do it in the context of a Bible study. And I think that Steve definitely had a lot of patience with me as we covered a lot of the same topics over and over, including stuff that was covered in the book before the Bible study. But it was really good also for me to consider the same topics that we discussed about previously in the context of the Bible study, because now I see things in a different context with, you know, with the certain events that are happening in Jesus' life. And that helped cement, you know, a better understanding. Because, you know, when you learn anything, whether it be chemistry, math, biology, you don't just learn one fact and then you move on. You're tackling it from different angles and learning it different ways. And really, that was just another way to help me understand what Christianity was all about.
That's really interesting. And where were you by the point you were having this kind of particular part of your dialogue and going through the Gospel of John? Had you kind of started to think of yourself as a Christian? Was there a particular moment? Was there a particular, you know, thing that Steve said or an argument or whatever that kind of helped you to get to that point? What did it look like for you, Vicky?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, of this entire journey, probably 80% was intellectual and 20% was sort of the emotional aspect of it. And I think when we started this Bible study, I was intellectually on board with God's existence and Jesus' existence and maybe even what Jesus said. So I could say, yeah, sure, I think Jesus existed and I think he could probably be the Son of God, but that doesn't mean anything for me. And so there's this disconnect between, well, like if he is who he says he is, then it should have, you know, a lot of implications for you. And I think I was just still in a state of like, you know, I was still trying to keep it distant. And so probably, you know, the time we're going through John, 80%, like, you know, over half of it, I would say, I was still thinking about it intellectually, but I wasn't letting it get to me personally.
And what changed that ultimately?
So what changed it was, so I was involved in this graduate student ministry, you know, all the while. And, you know, I didn't think of myself as a Christian, even though it was funny because I was talking to a mentor I had, and I told her I was having this conversation with Steve, and I was having this conversation with my PhD advisor, and really just going to the Bible studies, and really I thought about God and God's existence a lot, and it reminded me of something that Steve said in the conversation of where there's not probably an hour or more that goes by without him thinking about God or something of that nature. And so I was like, oh, well, am I a Christian? But I don't really think so. There's something just not personally there for me. But so I went to a retreat with a graduate student ministry, and it was sort of an immersive experience, and there was this exercise that we did, and it was to really just think about the circles of people in your life. So on the outer circle you have acquaintances, and in your inner circle, or the middle circle, you have friends and family, and then your core circle are the people that are closest to you, your immediate family, significant other, etc. And so I really just thought about, the people in my life, and I realized that, in my, most of the people in my life that were close to me were not Christian. And I realized that, from doing this exercise, I realized that I didn't want to be a Christian because I didn't want to be ostracized. I didn't want to be the person who had different views, and I didn't want to deal with the difficulty of explaining that, oh, well, I think this is reasonable, and really just, surrendering myself, and I didn't want to do that. And once again, I saw that, okay, this is, me holding on to my pride of, I want to hold on to my identity. I want to hold on to sort of my place in these circles. And once I realized that, it was really an undercurrent of fear that I never really acknowledged or noticed before. And once I, saw it for what it was, I was like, well, if I think this is complete, all the pieces are there, but I just don't want to acknowledge that it's there because I'm afraid to, then that's not really a good reason. So, it was there at the retreat that I was like, okay, I made my decision at that point.
Wow. And what, I mean, you sound like a very sort of someone who does approach everything, your science, your career, in a kind of quite methodical, if you like, almost, scientific way. Did you at some point, I mean, did that kind of decision have to, in a sense, go beyond though that kind of very, if you like, purely rational approach? Did it mean, I guess, surrendering to something, I suppose, that ultimately you don't have full control over in the way that you do perhaps over your career and your academic studies and those kinds of things?
Yeah, so I guess this kind of relates to sort of this question that I get of like, how did you feel, once you made your decision? And I honestly felt terrified. I thought that like maybe I made the decision too soon, or maybe it was the wrong decision, or maybe I was being too hasty about it. But I really took the opportunity to just pray about it, and really just and I prayed. I was like, well, if God, if you're out there, then this here, listen to my prayer, or essentially. So I tried to pray even before I decided that, even before I made my decision. But even afterwards, I feel like that was sort of more important for me because I felt just kind of hesitant and afraid, and just I don't like to make these decisions lightly, and I didn't want to, I didn't think I would go back on my decision, but I just wanted really, a better understanding. So it's really been, I would say that's sort of the beginning of my journey. I feel like, I've grown a lot since then, and I still am growing a lot. And I think, more of what's changed is more of the emotional aspect, and that came after the intellectual, methodical decision of like, who am I as a person, and really like, if God is, a fully good God, then he can't stand my sins, and sort of what does that mean, for me as a sinner, and why do I need Jesus more than just saying, yeah, he exists because history points towards his existence. I think it became more personal after I made, the decision to pursue God, more just openly.
Yeah, interesting stuff, Steve. I, as you say, you didn't go in as it were, to convert Vicky in the course of having this conversation. Now, of course, you know, you're a Christian, and I'm sure there are Vicky and anyone else you would love to have seen come to Jesus in that way. But what was your response as Vicky went on this journey and she started sharing some of the details of it with you?
Well, we actually had a phone call for the first time. This whole conversation had been just written text. So she called and said, "I need to tell you something." So she told me what she decided to follow Jesus. And I mean, one of the top 10 moments of my life, to be honest. It just really, really showed me who God is in a new way, how patient he is with us, and how clever is an understatement he is to put all the pieces into place, both through, you know, our conversation from 2,000 miles apart to all the things that were happening in her life over on that end, all the way to my entire background, my upbringing, the difficult things that I went through, and allowing that in my life to be able to talk freely with anybody and not be scandalized. So I could suddenly see the whole big picture and how big and good and loving God is. And I was just ecstatic to hear that she had decided to follow Jesus. Because like I said, we don't need more members. This is not a club. But I really do think it is the best news that I can give to somebody. And when they embrace that news, it's just, it's so, so fulfilling.
And what effect has the whole journey had on you overall, would you say, Steve?
I think, you know, one thing that I've heard a lot of people say, especially on your show, is just this idea that extraordinary claims need extraordinary evidence. And what I've kind of gathered from this, first of all, that's not true. It didn't happen in this book. It was hundreds of little things over and over that led Vicky to faith and has led me to faith. There's not one particular argument. So the overall impact on me has been to realize that I'm not going to be able to, with one, you know, really cool sentence, show somebody that they should that they should follow Jesus. But by loving them, by choosing to be in their life, by choosing to answer their questions, by choosing to live life with them and love and care about them, that over time, this might happen, you know. And it just, again, showed me the patience of God and the love of God. And I could see him doing that in my own life.
And I'm sure that's true, Vicky, in your case, that it wasn't just the arguments and the conversation. It was obviously Steve being a friend and the way he conducted himself in that was, I'm sure, part of the reason why you ultimately felt this is something I might want to be part of ultimately. Would that be
true?
Yeah,
certainly. And you know, going into this, my experience with people who were Christian who wanted to talk about faith were people who really just wanted to convert you right then and there, like whether it be on the sidewalk or just like, you know, in some random setting. And I felt like there was never any regard for you as a person. It was just follow me because you should. And I feel like just not having that relationship, having that conversation is, you know, for me at least, not the best way to go about it, because it's really impersonal and it's just like, well, why do I need to do the thing you want? What about the thing that I want? And so being able to address these concerns in a friendly fashion, in a friendly format, really helped me to see that, okay, like, he's not talking to me to get something out of me. I'm not just, you know, another number that he has to meet, a quota he has to meet in order to, you know, do good things or whatever. But it was like, you know, it was really interesting for me to think about it from the perspective of if this is really the best news I've ever had, then yes, I will want to share it with people. You know, if you go to an amazing restaurant, you want to share that with others and be like, check this out also. And, you know, I really saw it from sort of that perspective of like, he wasn't saying do this because you need to, and I need to fulfill my duty of, you know, being a Christian, but no, this is really good news. And I want you to hear it because I care about you. And so that made all the difference.
So Vicky, have you been baptized? I'm wondering, is that something that is yet to happen or something that has
happened?
It's
yet to happen. And I guess not helped by COVID.
Absolutely. It's a tricky time to actually become a Christian during COVID, isn't it? But I'm so glad to hear that the story and the way that you guys, you know, that this all happened. Well done on getting the book as well together. Now, if you like Unbelievable, if you're listening or watching and you like the dialogue format of The Unbelievable Show, I think you'll love this book because it really is a dialogue in the way that you might listen to an Unbelievable show. And I really enjoyed reading it. It's called Who Is God Really? Two Scientists Discuss Their Faith. And yeah, you will read the dialogue that happened. It's very real. This isn't like a scripted thing, you know. That's what I love about the book. It's a genuine dialogue that happened in real time between two ordinary, very intelligent, but ordinary people. And that's what attracted me. And so I'm just so glad to have you both on the show, Vicky and Steve. Thank you very much for being on with me, and all the best to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
That's my guests, Steve and Vicky. Again, if you want more from the book, Who Is God Really? It's a really easy website, whoisgodreally.com. Well, if you've any thoughts on what you heard on today's show, the story of the dialogue between Steve and Vicky, then do get in touch. You can email unbelievable@premier.org.uk. I see all of those emails. I don't get to respond to all of them, certainly don't get to read them all out on the show, but I do see them all. So you can email me that way. You can also get in touch with the show on our social media. At UnbelievableJB for the Twitter account, facebook.com/UnbelievableJB if you want to follow the show on Facebook and leave a comment there. You can also find me on my own Instagram too, at Justin.Briley, and TikTok, which I haven't posted on in ages actually, but I'm going to try and put a few more videos up there this autumn if you enjoy a bit of TikTok fun. Now, lots and lots of response to last week's live stream Q&A with Christine Cobes-Dumais, and both sort of, yeah, positive and negative. Some people would have liked to see some more pushback, more of a kind of dialogue on the whole issue of masculinity and so on. Maybe we can arrange that in due course. I will leave some of that for next week, some of that feedback on last week's show, and indeed other shows over the summer that we've not really heard your feedback on yet. But lots of interesting feedback also coming in on the classic replay that we put out this last week with Mark Driscoll. This was my early 2012 conversation I had with him, which was for Christianity magazine at the time. It was never intended actually to be an Unbelievable show. So it's a bit different to the normal kinds of conversations you'd hear on Unbelievable. And of course, nearly 10 years old now. But Michael Ronson tweeted to say, very interesting to hear this nearly 10 years on. Regardless of his views, it's clear there was and is a problem attracting young men to the church. And I'm relieved that Jordan Peterson, Bishop Barron and others have entered this space in the years since Mark Driscoll was active. Robert Miles asks a similar question. Does the recent cultural phenomenon of Mark Driscoll's rise and fall cause you, Justin, to reflect on the popularity of Jordan Peterson among some evangelicals? Not the same person, obviously, but there are lots of parallels, especially when it comes to ideas on masculinity and gender. Certainly has occurred to me. In fact, when I first had Jordan Peterson on the show a few years ago now, and I wrote a profile of him based off the back of that, I did actually make a comparison with Mark Driscoll, because inevitably they both have attracted flocks of young men. Now, as you say, very different people, different style. And, you know, Christine Cobes-Dumais said she doesn't, you know, she thinks that the idea of a crisis of masculinity is an overblown idea. Nevertheless, I think there is a crisis of identity of sorts among young people in the West. And I think if it's not a crisis of masculinity exactly, that's what both Driscoll and Peterson have sort of put their finger on, obviously doing it in different ways. So I think there is an interesting overlap there. That emerged into an interesting little discussion on Twitter with other people chiming in as well. Thank you very much for those who got in touch about the show. Austin also emailed in to say, big fan of Unbelievable. Serves me week after week with countless hours of thoughtful conversation. The particular thing that has drawn me to your interviews, though, is your demeanour and the winsome approach you take. I've been listening back through the infamous Mark Driscoll interview. Countless things could be said about his content, his frustration, and the sharp jabs he took at the church in the UK. However, I want you to reconsider how you conducted that interview As I stated previously, it's your demeanor that's drawn me to these conversations. But I felt you departed from that in this interview. In your interview with Christine Cobes-Dume, I even sensed a tinge of pride in the controversy that was brought to light from his confrontation with you. The specific items I'd ask you to consider is that the occasion for the interview was the book Real Marriage, and yet the only questions you asked that were marriage-related were in regards to controversial opinions. For example, you started off asking about complementarianism, then a lengthy discussion about sexual content, and after that, you only seem to drill down on what we would consider today toxic masculinity. I would agree with Mark's assertion that only one question was directed at his wife through the time. Furthermore, you do have agreement from Mark to speak generally about his ministry, but I think if you look at the time allotment given to each topic, you chose to rest firmly on controversy with regards to his ministry. I'd ask you to reflect on whether or not you kept Mark on the defensive throughout the interview and what may have motivated that. Mark said plenty in the interview that was indefensible, but I think in the climate that it's easy to pile on to the deconstruction of Mark and Mars Hill, and I think we should be ready to reflect on how we could also let Mark Driscoll bring out the worst in each of us. As you reflect, do you feel you conducted that interview fairly or revelled in the controversy? You've undoubtedly grown in your skills since this time. How would you conduct that interview today? It's an interesting question, Austin. And the thing I'd say is that when I recorded that interview, as I sort of make clear at the beginning of the podcast, I was never actually going to use it in audio form. That was never the plan. So in a sense, I wasn't recording it with an expectation of an audience listening in. It was going to be written up for this profile, effectively, of Mark Driscoll in our Christianity magazine. It was only because he then made a certain number of accusations against me in public as regards to the nature of this interview that I thought, well, I should put it out on my Unbelievable podcast, at least let people make up their own mind. Now, would I have recorded it differently? I felt I was doing the right thing journalistically, really. We were there to profile the book, but we'd made an agreement it would be more of a profile piece on Mark himself. And I asked Grace to just chime in whenever she wanted to on that. But it was, you know, it was essentially set up as an interview with Mark in this instance. So I guess I was just being a journalist, you know. Yes, I zeroed in on the controversial things he had said and done at the time, trying to give him an opportunity to respond and defend to that. He went on to give more controversial statements, inevitably. So I don't think I was doing the job I was asked to do, which was to ask the questions that I think the audience of the magazine wanted to be heard. And yes, it will sound and feel different to a typical Unbelievable audience or interview because of that. It wasn't, you know, originally intended for that format. But anyway, I'm glad of your comments. And yes, it's important for all of us to reflect on how we conduct ourselves and that kind of thing. Anyway, 10 years ago, still talking about it today. How about that? It's thanks to the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill podcast, which has obviously stirred interest once more in all things Mark Driscoll. Thanks to others who have got in touch as well, Matt and others who have emailed in, and maybe we'll have more time next time for more of your thoughts on that, along with the show I did with Christine Cobes-Dume. Well, joining me on the show now is Luke Martin from the Creed and Culture Project, and they've got something exciting going on towards the end of the month. It's an event with John Lennox, and it's the start of a special series of events that they're going to be running, well, until, you know, time immemorial. Who knows how long this could last. But Luke, welcome along to the show. Tell us a little of yourself, your background, and what the Creed and Culture Project is.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. I'm Luke. I'm 33 years old. I live just outside of London. My day job is that I teach theology. I teach theology over at Eton, and I'm also a lay minister in the Church of England. I like to write a bit of theology as well. And I'm the founder of this project.
Tell us about the project. So Creed and Culture, I guess there's a clue in the name. What are you trying to do through these series of events that you're starting?
Yeah, so what we're doing is we're creating events for people to explore the Christian faith through accessible theology and through the arts. The events take place on Saturday afternoons, several times a year. And we're currently in the Emmanuel Centre near Westminster. They run from 2 to 5 p.m., so they're quite long, but what we really want the events to be interactive. It's not just a case of a speaker being at the front and listening to the speaker and leaving afterwards. Rather, we want people to come along and meet other people, discuss the ideas that the speaker is putting forward, and ask questions to the speaker and the artists, either in person at the microphone at the front or using one of our apps.
In person, at last, back again.
Looking
forward to that?
Definitely. So we were due to start May 2020. So we've been postponing for over a year, but we're really excited that the government's allowing us to go ahead at the end of September. We will have some restrictions in place, but we don't think those restrictions are going to take away from the in-person event. And speaking for myself, partly as a teacher, we did a lot of work online, but I'm just eager to get back in person with people, you know, see the speaker in front of me, ask the questions to the speaker himself rather than to a Zoom screen, and to meet other people, meet like-minded people who also want to explore faith, ask questions, and encourage one another.
Mm. Now, this first event, this inaugural event, if you like, is on Saturday, the 25th of September. It's in the afternoon, as you say, the Emmanuel Centre, Marsham Street in Westminster. I know it well. I've walked past it and been in it many times over the years. It's just around the corner, actually, from where Premier's radio studio is. Hope, that's the theme. Why that theme? And what do you think John Lennox is going to have to say to that theme?
Yeah, good question. Well, we're just living at a really unusual point in history, in my opinion, anyway. I've been speaking to my parents about this, but I think since the Second World War, we haven't seen this sort of societal disruption. On the one hand, we've got COVID-19 and the surprise that it was and the effect that it's having on society. We've also got the culture wars, this sort of political polarization where groups are increasingly talking past each other and getting angry at each other. And then there's just also the age-old problem of suffering, of mental and physical suffering. So we really feel that this is an unusual moment, and unusual moments call for discussion and debate and thought and hope as well. I think through the virus, it depends on what your background is, what your occupation is. As a teacher, I was employed throughout, but you know, it's been a really difficult time for a lot of people, and the Christian message is one of hope. So John's written this book on about the coronavirus and what the Christian message has to say about it. So we're going to be getting into those sort of ideas, the idea of how the Christian message can encourage us, inspire us during these difficult times, but also how it can shed light on what's going on at the moment. I think a lot of people I speak to are just asking these sort of questions. It's a really strange time. Mm. Yes, because of the economy. Yes, because of the virus, but also because of this sense that there's sort of a shift in the values that have been present in British society for so long.
Yeah. Well, having had the opportunity to share a stage with John several times over the years, I know just how much an audience gets out of having him present, and he's wonderful when it comes to the interactions as well. So I'm sure that'll be really valuable for those deep questions you're looking into. It's not just John though. It's kind of it's not just a sort of we'll just go for your head kind of event, right? The Creed and Culture, is it? You're trying to do something a bit different. So tell us about the other aspects of the...
Head and heart, theology and the arts. We actually started, Justin, as a theology philosophy project, doing essentially something similar to what you're doing, but in person all the time. But we then added the arts element. My background is theology and philosophy, so that's where I'm comfortable. But increasingly, myself and others became aware that we really need to listen to artists. For those who are a bit more nerdy, they might like to know that Ian McGilchrist's work had a real influence on me and his work on the importance of art on how we understand the world. So, yeah, we're bringing together a top speaker like John, but also two artists, Ben Amos, who is a singer-songwriter, and Ali Gordon, who is a visual artist, and he's also the founder of Morphe, which is a Christian arts organization. So my sense is that the people that will come, you know, there'll probably be, some might be more like me, they might be more drawn to the theology side, some might be more drawn to the art, but the hope is that we can learn from the various people presenting. So for me, I'm quite comfortable in the theology side, but I really want to hear and learn from the artists. Hopefully, all three of them sort of minister to the whole person, as you said, not just to the brain.
Yeah. And there'll obviously be opportunities to sort of just meet the other people who are present at the event. I'm sure there'll be a lot of interesting conversations and networking and just meeting up with people who are interested in the same kinds of questions as well. And I assume not just aimed at Christians, should we make clear?
Yeah, it's open to anyone, from whether they're Christian or not. It's certainly not, if you like, an evangelistic event where we're specifically, targeting it at people who aren't Christians. But essentially, it's just a case of, you know, we're exploring the Christian faith. Come along. If you're a Christian who wants to go deeper, ask questions, imagine the faith in a deeper way, then come along. If you're someone who struggles with questions about faith, you struggle with doubt, maybe you're losing your faith, come along. If you're on the fence, come along. Or if you're not Christian but you want to find out more, what I'd say is you're very welcome to come along. And there's no tricks, there's no surprises. We're not out to get you. It's just we want to look plainly and clearly at the Christian message and see what effect it has on our lives.
Well, there you go, John Lennox. Time for Q&A. Some great artists, both visual and musical, taking place. And it sort of just takes place over an afternoon. And that's Saturday, what is it, 25th of September. The first, as I say, of what we hope will be many events. So tell us what else you've got in the schedule at the moment, Luke.
Yeah, we've got another event in November with Elaine Storkey, who'll be speaking on the theme of identity. And she'll be joined by Tom McConnell, who is another singer-songwriter, and Hannah Rose Thomas, who is an artist. So we're running them every 2 months at the moment, and we're hoping to move to once a month, because one of the things we really want to do is help people meet like-minded people. And we think that essentially the more often we can run the events, the more that we can build up a sense of community, help people build other networks whilst remaining distinct from a church which meets, you know, every Sunday and during the week as well. So so we're excited about the end of the month with Lennox. We're excited about the end of November with Elaine Storkey. Yeah.
Well, look, if you want to find out more, go to the website creedandculture.co.uk. It's in person. Yes, no screens at this event. And you can't even attend via a screen, I should say. You are going for a fully in-person sort of just experience here. It looks like a really excellent way to be kicking off this new venture, Luke. So again, Saturday, 25th of September. It's in the afternoon, 2 till 5 p.m. at Emmanuel Centre, Marsham Street, London. And if that's something like you'd like to go along to, or maybe you know someone who'd enjoy going, or you could go together or whatever, then why not think about that? creedandculture.co.uk. Maybe we can catch up once the event's taken place and you could tell us how it all went, Luke.
Love to, Justin. Yeah, I'd love to talk more.
And all the best for it. This is the kind of thing I love to see happening, and the kind of thing we need at this moment as well. I've always said apologetics and theology is best done when it's done in a kind of relational way, where, you know, addressing the whole person, not just one aspect of the individual. So more power to you for doing that. But thanks for being with me on the show today, Luke.
Great. Thanks, Justin.
Thanks for being with us on today's edition of the show. Do make sure to check out all of the resources, podcast videos and more from our show page at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. For now, I'll love you and leave you, tell you what's coming up next week. We're talking about getting high with the Most High, hallucinogenic drugs and faith. is our topic. Ashley Land was a regular user of hallucinogenic drugs before becoming a Christian. It was some bad trips that led her to question where these experiences were coming from. She's going to be in conversation with someone who's an advocate of the value of hallucinogenic drugs for opening up our consciousness, Dr. Peter Husted Hughes. So listen out for that. Should be a really interesting show. Same time next week. Until then, stay safe. See you then.